Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18. So, is it 73? I think it's 73, did it yesterday. Arjuna Vacha. Nashto Moha Smritir Labdva. It's a very difficult verse. So we should skip this one. it's too hard to chant. Nashto Moha Smritir Labdva. Tat Prasadan Maya Chuta. Stitos Migata Sandeha. Harishe Vachanam Tava. Arjuna Vacha. Arjuna said, Nashta, dispelled. Moha, illusion. Smriti, memory. Labdha, regained. Tat Prasadat, by your mercy. Maya, by me. Chuta, O infallible Krishna. Stitaha, situated. Asmi, I am. Gata, removed. Sandeha, all doubts. Karishe, I shall execute. Vachanam, order. Tava, your. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt. I am prepared to act according to your instructions. Purport. The constitutional position of a living entity, represented by Arjuna, is that he has to act according to the order of the Supreme Lord. He is meant for self-discipline. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that the actual position of the living entity is that of eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. Forgetting this principle, the living entity becomes conditioned by material nature, but in serving the Supreme Lord, he becomes the liberated servant of God. The living entity's constitutional position is to be a servitor. He has to serve either the illusory Maya or the Supreme Lord. If he serves the Supreme Lord, he is in his normal condition. But if he prefers to serve the illusory external energy, then certainly he'll be in bondage. An illusion the living entity is serving in this material world. He is bound by his lust and desires, yet he thinks as himself as the master of the world. This is called illusion. When a person is liberated, his illusion is over, and he voluntarily surrenders unto the Supreme to act according to his desire. The last illusion, the last snare of Maya, is to trap the living entity. Is a proposition that he is God. The living entity thinks that he is no longer a conditioned soul, but God. He is so unintelligent that he does not think that if he were God, then how could he be in doubt? That he does not consider. So that is the last snare of illusion. Actually, to become free from the illusory energy is to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and agree to act according to his desire. The word moha is very important in this verse. Moha refers to that which is opposed to knowledge. Actually, real knowledge is the understanding that every living being is eternally a servitor of the Lord. But instead of thinking oneself in that position, the living entity thinks that he is not a servant, that he is the master of the material world. For he wants to lord it over material nature. That is his illusion. This illusion can be overcome by the mercy of the Lord or by the mercy of a pure devotee. When that illusion is over, one agrees to act in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is acting according to Krishna's order. A conditioned soul, illusioned by the external energy of matter, does not know that the Supreme Lord is the Master who is full of knowledge and who is proprietor of everything. Whatever he desires, he can bestow upon his devotees. He is a friend of everyone, and he is especially inclined to his devotee. He is the controller of this material nature and of all living entities. He is also the controller of inexhaustible time, and he is full of all opulences and all potencies. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can even give himself to the devotee. One who does not know him is under the spell of illusion. He does not become a devotee, but a servitor of Maya. Arjuna, however, after hearing Bhagavad Gita from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becomes free from all illusion. He could understand that Krishna was not only his friend, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he understood that Krishna factually. So to study Bhagavad Gita is to understand Krishna factually. When a person is in full knowledge, he naturally surrenders to Krishna. And when Arjuna understood that it was Krishna's plan to reduce the unnecessary increase of the population, he agreed to fight according to Krishna's desire. He again took up his weapons, his arrows and bow, to fight under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nashtamoha smridhir labdva tat prasadamaya chuta stito smigata sandeha krishe vachanam dava. Arjuna said, "My dear Krishna, I am a fallible one. My illusion is now gone. I regain my memory by your mercy, and now firm and free from doubt, prepare to act according to your instructions." Interesting here, note to note, that now they talk about there's a conspiracy for population reduction. What do they call that? Something about...
decrease.
Yeah, they plan to eliminate the unwanted population, which is practically everyone. But here Krishna also had a plan for population reduction. He also wanted to reduce the unnecessary increase of population. But the difference is, well, it said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he introduced the holy name and the process of devotional service, because he realized that if he came as he did in his other incarnations, where he also reduces population, such as in the battle of Kurukshetra or when Krishna was in Dwarka, how much of the unwanted population did he reduce? Simply, Lord Ramachandra reduced the unpopulation, the demons. The problem is that nowadays everyone is a demon, practically speaking. So if Krishna came and did his part to reduce the unwanted population, there would be hardly anyone left. Therefore, he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna doesn't have to reduce the unwanted population because they're killing each other off. But Krishna has to reduce the unwanted, change the demons into devotees by the Sankirtan movement. And here, the way of doing that is we have to get free from, as Krishna says, jayate vishayam pumsam sangaste shubhajayate sangachan jayate kama krodo bhajayate krodad bhavati samoha samoha smriti vibram sad smriti bram sad buddhinasho buddhinashat panashati. The whole problem is that we don't recognize Krishna as a proprietor. And the conclusion is that if Krishna is the proprietor, then he's also, his energy should be used in his service. So even if someone can't admit that there's a God and that he's controlling the universe, still they don't know how to utilize his energies in his service. Nor do they think it's that important. Well, maybe they do think it's important, but they don't know exactly how to utilize them properly. They don't know what Krishna actually wants. They don't know the Krishna. First of all, they don't know that Krishna is the Supreme. And therefore, they don't know what Krishna wants. Or do they don't care what Krishna wants? Because they don't know how he is the controller of the infinite and the finite. Avijananti mamhuta manushim tanum ashritya parambhavam janatam mamabhuta maheshram. If Krishna is controlling the infinite and the finite, it might be a good idea to find out what he wants. Because if we don't do something he wants, we might get into trouble. Now, Krishna doesn't throw a thunderbolt at everyone who doesn't do what he wants, because although sometimes people do get hit by thunderbolts, but that's not very common. People are getting hit in so many other ways. By the polluted air, by the polluted water, by the polluted food, by the polluted minds. They're being punished by Krishna because they don't do what Krishna wants. Krishna never asked people to open up slaughterhouses or factories or any of these things. This is all mental concoction. And we may say, well, I'm innocent because I didn't open the factory. But if we're enjoying the products independently of utilizing them in Krishna service, then we become implicated. And just the fact that we've taken birth in the material world means that we have to suffer collective karma also. We can't take an erasa where we live and, generally speaking, and erase all the bad air. Nor can we drink completely pure water. I mean, if we do that, we'd spend our whole life trying to live a completely healthy life, and then we die anyhow. So that's not the aim of life, to live a completely healthy life. The aim of life is to follow Krishna's instructions to the best of our ability, and not the instructions of lust, anger, and greed, which lead to illusion, forgetfulness, loss of intelligence, and becoming more and more entangled in the material energy, being forced more and more strongly with more and more illusion to act according to the illusory conceptions of life. Therefore, struggling in the material world, we also have to add Krishna consciousness, because the material world means struggling. Just to get up out of bed is a struggle for most people. Not to eat too much is a struggle. To control the mind and to utilize in Krishna service, most people don't even bother. They don't even know that that's what they're supposed to be doing. But they have there's some morality still left because of some religious principles. But even to follow that morality is becoming more and more difficult. What was considered completely abominable 20 years ago is completely normal nowadays. It's completely acceptable. As a matter of fact, you're obliged to think that this is normal, or else you're not normal. And 20 years from now, what was considered completely abominable now will be completely acceptable the way things are going. Because as one acts in illusion, one falls deeper into illusion. But Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, and if we listen to Bhagavad Gita, if we chant Hare Krishna, especially in this age, then gradually we'll get the power to overcome lust, anger, greed, by acting in Krishna's service, and therefore gradually our illusion will go away. And what is that illusion? That there's something more beneficial than to become Krishna conscious. There's some experience higher than Krishna consciousness, something more desirable than to become Krishna conscious. So, but if we practice Krishna consciousness properly, then gradually Krishna will reveal to us that there is actually nothing better than Krishna. having Krishna's association through the process of devotional service. And therefore, gradually, as we become purified, the influence of material nature will gradually be less on us. We won't be so much in illusion. We'll understand things better. And therefore, we'll become more determined to act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. In any case, Prabhupada keeps on, has repeated the same thing here, that actually it's our constitutional position is to serve Krishna. What that means, we're doing it by chanting Hare Krishna, by worshiping the deities, etc., etc. Although, there's a difference between a green mango and a ripe mango. When the mango is green, it doesn't taste so good, so sweet. But when the mango gets ripe, then it tastes very sweet. So similarly, when we're performing devotional service, in the beginning, we don't experience the overwhelming ecstasy that we're looking for, or happiness, or even a little bit of the pleasure we're looking for. But in the course of time, as our understanding develops, as our devotional service develops, then the chanting, the worshiping the deities, the taking prasadam, the association with devotees, all these have become sweeter as time goes on. And therefore we can understand the value gradually of associating with Krishna, in devotional service. That's a question of time. Of just becoming determined to follow the process as it is, not to add anything to it or take anything away from it. Just follow the process as it is, and therefore, and then try to concentrate our minds on it with some determination. Not get distracted by the incessant flow of desires, as Krishna says, that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled and but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So to just gradually give up this tendency to think that there's something better than Krishna's service, and catch on to these desires and follow them, and get deviated from Krishna's service during the day. So as we become more and more convinced that there's nothing sweeter than Krishna's service, then these other things will seem not so attractive to us anymore. And then we'll actually identify ourselves as Krishna's servants, servants of the servants, which is why we take initiation to develop that identity. That now I'm the servant of Krishna's servant, and he's the servant of Krishna's servant, and ultimately it comes back that I'm becoming a servant of the servant of the servant of who? Of Krishna. So the more we identify ourselves as Krishna's servants, the less we'll identify ourselves with all these other identifications. Namely, I'm male, I'm female, I'm black and I'm white, I'm rich and I'm poor, I'm this sannyasi, grihas. We'll stop identifying ourselves as these things and just identify ourselves as Gopi Bharata Padakamalayor, Dasa, Dasa, Anudasa, simply the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And therefore, whoever we meet, we'll try to serve Krishna. Whatever we do, we'll try to serve Krishna. And that means that our illusion will go away, born of false ego. We'll just gradually will realize, actually, that's who I am. I'm the person who's conscious within the body, and the person who's conscious in the body is actually eternally a servant of Krishna. We can't do anything, even in the material world or in the spiritual world, unless Krishna gives us the intelligence to do it. So we have a choice. Either we can, as a spiritual being, we can serve illusion or we can serve Krishna, but it's much more auspicious to serve Krishna than to serve illusion. So Bhagavad Gita gives us the direction how to serve Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us examples of how to serve Krishna. And if we accept this literature and apply it within our lives to the greatest extent we can and serve Krishna, then we'll realize who we actually are. Then the covering of illusion that with this body or something other than our eternal spiritual identity will go away. And one day we'll gradually enter into our spiritual identity. And therefore, there won't be any more problems. There's always problems with the body, the mind. But there won't be any problems for us, the soul, the actual person, the body. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Is Maya eternal?
Sure, why not? She's Krishna. She's an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So why shouldn't she be eternal too? But we don't have to be eternally Maya ourselves. She bewilders us only when we ask her to. When we want to be in Maya, when we want to be influenced by Maya, then Maya influences us. It's like the police force. Theoretically, if you're a good citizen, the police doesn't bother you. But if you're a criminal, then you can expect the police to go after you. So we act as criminals, then Maya overwhelms us. And we act as good citizens, then Krishna, and Srimati Radharani, and her internal energy overwhelms us. Anything else? Hola, Grantharaj Bhagavad Gita Kijaj.